Hello, this is episode number 34 of Tech Policy Weekly from the Technology Liberation Front for Thursday, October 25th, 2007. I'm your host, Adam Thier of the Progress and Freedom Foundation. The hot topic that is lighting up the blogosphere this week was the revelation by an Associated Press report that cable giant Comcast is apparently engaging in certain so-called traffic-shaping techniques as they relate to BitTorrent. What exactly is Comcast up to, and what are the ramifications of the company's traffic-shaping activities for the longer-term debate over net neutrality policy in this country? That's going to be the focus of this week's podcast. Joining me for the discussion today are two of our regular contributors at the Tech Liberation Front blog, Jerry Brito of the Mercatus Center. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Al.
And James Gattuso of the Heritage Foundation. Hello, James.
Hi. How are you?
We're also pleased to be joined today by two very special guests. First, we're pleased to welcome Ed Felton back to the show again. He is a professor of computer science and public affairs and director of the Center for Information Technology Policy at Princeton University. Hello again, Professor Felton.
Hi, Adam.
And we're also joined today by Richard Bennett, who has been one of the most avid contributors to the Tech Liberation Front blog through the years, as he has probably commented on more of our blog postings than just about anyone else. But his more important qualification, and the reason we're most pleased to have him on today's show, is that Richard has spent the last 30 years designing network traffic systems and understands network management issues inside and out. Richard, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Adam.
Jerry Brito, I want to start with you and ask you to kick off today's discussion, since you were the first to post something about this on the TLF blog. So before we get into the meat of the issue, could you give our listeners a feel for exactly what is happening in this case?
Sure. Well, what happened is basically that the AP had been doing some investigation of Comcast traffic management. And basically they found that in certain instances, they could see that whenever they use BitTorrent to transfer a file or try to upload a file, the connection would be reset. And upon further investigation, they found, and I hope our guests can explain exactly what this means, but that whenever a file was trying to be uploaded, Comcast would sort of pretend to be the user and send a reset so that the connection would be dropped. This, you know, caused a big uproar among the blogs and also among some newspaper columnists. And, you know, basically folks who say, look, this is more evidence that the big providers need to be regulated and we need to have, you know, net neutrality regulation. Now, what's interesting to me about this is that Comcast definitely has an interest in managing its network because, as you all know, BitTorrent traffic really accounts for a lot of bandwidth use and it affects other users on a network. But the way that they're doing it, however, is that they're blocking an entire protocol, it seems, and I hope that you know, the discussion can explain what this means. They're not going after heavy users. They're going after an entire protocol, and that's what seems to be enraging the net neutrality proponents.
Right. Okay, well, let's at that point bring in Ed Felton so we can get more into the weeds here and talk about what's actually happening here. Ed, you posted something over on your blog, the Freedom to Tinker blog, about this just a few days ago. Give us your perspective on this and what's going on here.
Sure. I think there are really two issues here. One is that Comcast has not been upfront with people about what they're doing. What we know about what's happening has been discovered by experiments like the experiments that AP did, and by inference and by reasoning by analogy from things that happen in other people's networks. But as far as we know, what Jerry described is basically right, that that Comcast is apparently looking for certain uses of the BitTorrent protocol and then intervening by essentially telling each end of the network connection that the other end has hung up. Now, what I commented on in my blog is that this is not the usual way of managing and dealing with congestion in the internet or in large networks. There are other mechanisms that are built into the TCP protocol which to me seem like more natural and more friendly ways to shape traffic, but that's not what Comcast is doing. What Comcast is doing is, I think, a bit sneakier in nature.
Well, what would be the friendly way to manage traffic, in your opinion?
Well, the usual way, or the sort of the standard way of dealing with a congested network is to have the network drop drop individual packets of data. When you communicate across the internet, the data that you sent is divided up into packets. And the usual thing that happens in congestion is that individual packets get lost or dropped when the network in the middle is overwhelmed. And the hosts at the endpoints that are communicating recognize the dropped packets and say, okay, the network must be congested, so let's slow down. And there's a really exquisitely engineered mechanism by which the end host can react to congestion in the internet. But all that relies on the network in the middle responding to congestion in a certain way by dropping packets, whereas Comcast did something else.
I see. Let's bring Richard Bennett in at this point and ask him for his thoughts on this issue and exactly how he would respond to what Professor Felton had to say there.
Yeah, other than badly managing the public relations war, I really don't see Comcast as the wrongdoer here. They do have a responsibility, as Jerry pointed out, to their customers to keep their network stable and responsive, and that appears to be just exactly what they've done. And it is worth, you know, clarifying that they don't block or meter the normal use of BitTorrent for downloading, you know, distributions of open source files or movies or whatever. The restrictions that they place on their network are a slow rate of BitTorrent uploads, which means that if you're operating BitTorrent after your download is completed, you're serving up files to the rest of the internet, and they put a cap on the amount of bandwidth that they will let each user have to do that based on the conditions that on the network at any particular point in time. Now, Ed is criticizing them because they're not using the standard mechanism in TCP that was supposedly engineered to control congestion on the internet. And I think it's worth pointing out about that, that that's not really a general purpose solution to all sorts of network congestion problems. The TCP mechanism, which is something that we call slow start, is actually a point solution that was rapidly tacked on to the Internet Protocol Suite in the mid-80s to solve the problem that was then called congestion collapse that was caused by a very different protocol called FTP. The mechanism works for FTP because FTP only opens, I'm going to get a little bit technical here, it only opens one socket pair for its file transfer. What BitTorrent does is it opens multiple socket pairs, and so if one of those streams, let's say, is suppressed by the slow start algorithm, it simply shifts over to the other streams that haven't been slow started and continues transferring data. So BitTorrent's goal is to maintain a constant rate of upstream traffic. And because it has that goal, it will defeat the standard mechanism that's used by FTP. So what Comcast is doing with it's something called TCP resets, is actually a very common technique that every firewall uses for exactly the same purpose, to control access and traffic inside a network that's connected to the internet. So
now,
they're
Professor,
managing.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead and finish up.
Yeah, they're managing their private network, and they're doing it in a rational way.
So, Professor Felton, let me ask you to respond to that and also to respond to the question of, you know, if Comcast, you know, has an option of what other approaches they could take, what would they be, and where would this approach that they've taken here fit in that pecking order?
Well, first of all, I want to agree with Richard, I guess, that the part of the problem here is that Comcast is not talking about what they're doing, and they're not explaining themselves or indeed even really admitting that they're using this particular method. I think it would help everyone if Comcast would just explain what they're doing and why, what they think their justification is. Because certainly I think no one is arguing that they shouldn't be able to manage how the traffic on their network – they shouldn't be able to manage their network when it becomes congested. The question is really, are the methods they used aimed well at dealing with the congestion? Do they have other goals? Why haven't they explained to their customers what they're doing? There was a considerable length of time where most of the Comcast customers who were affected by this were unaware of what was going on. And I don't think that helps anybody. If Comcast's goal is to reduce the use of BitTorrent or certain uses of BitTorrent, they ought to explain to their users that if you use BitTorrent in this way, you'll get performance that you may not like because of the traffic shaping.
Professor,
so part of the problem here, yes.
Can I interrupt and actually say that I actually agree with that, and I think that's one thing we've pointed out on the TLF blog, which is that if there's one thing everyone can agree on, it's that the more transparency, the better about these traffic shaping or network management activities, and seemingly Comcast is coming around to that. However, it also seems clear that that would not be enough to satisfy some of the critics out there, and that indeed the very practices that we're describing here, which Richard's describing as fairly routine, and you seem to be agreeing, are occurring out there. Would you say that there's something wrong with those, or that there's a preferable way to go about doing this, as you mentioned before?
Well, I think that the mechanism they're using, I can imagine that the mechanism they're using may be justified. They have not offered a justification, so we can't really, I think, look at what they're doing and draw a conclusion about whether it's justified or not. In other words, we can't really evaluate, I think, yet whether the accusations of their harshest critics are actually correct.
I see.
At a technical level, and they could clear that up.
Assuming they
are behaving appropriately, they could clear that up by just talking about what they're doing.
Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they are trying to set the record straight. There was a third article by the AP reporter who broke this story in the mainstream media. It's actually been known by the BitTorrent community for several months. He did a third follow-up where he was a little bit more sympathetic to the Comcast point of view, and I think Comcast has been a little bit more forthcoming about, what they're doing and why. And where they make the point that they're not actually blocking these uploads altogether, they're just essentially rescheduling them for some future time when the network is not so busy. But, you have to understand that Comcast is playing a cat-and-mouse game with BitTorrent. And if you look into the details of how BitTorrent is engineered, it's fairly obvious that concealment of BitTorrent streams from traffic shaping and admission control and other sorts of network management technologies is an explicit goal.
Right.
Every concealment method that you can practically think of is used by BitTorrent to escape detection by the kind of network management systems that people like Comcast have to run. So to the extent that they're transparent, they're simply making themselves vulnerable to a reengineering of BitTorrent to escape whatever techniques they're employing.
Interesting. Okay, let's bring in James Gattuso, who hasn't had a chance to comment yet, and I want to broaden the discussion a bit with James and Jerry and ask about what the ramifications here are for the broader policy debates that continue to take place here in D.C. and across the country about net neutrality. James, why don't we go to you first?
Sure. What struck me about the press coverage of this is that a lot of it has a fairly cartoon version of net neutrality. You see a lot of people writing about how net neutrality means that you can't prioritize anything on a network. You have to treat everything equally, which is one version, but I think not the generally accepted version of network neutrality. I believe even Google accepts that its network management and prioritization has its role. Really, with the focus in recent months has been on whether you could charge for prioritization. This is a case where clearly Comcast was not trying to create two tiers in order to get more money from one user. They weren't trying to discriminate against someone in particular because they were a competitive threat or weren't paying enough. It was just the question of whether this is an appropriate network management technique. But reading the press, you would think that network management in itself was a violation, which just is not where the debate is.
Good point. Jerry, you want to comment?
Well, actually, I have a couple of questions for our guests, if you don't mind.
Sure, please.
I mean, one thing I'd like to get some insight on is, for example, Professor Susan Crawford and others sort of point out to the way that Comcast or the technique that Comcast has chosen here, where they basically pretend to be one, the client or the server, and send each other hang-up commands. And they refer to this as some sort of something fraudulent or it's an impersonation.
It sounds almost like identity theft, huh?
Right, and so I just want to get both of your reactions to that. To what extent is that something nefarious, or is this something more common?
Richard, why don't you answer that first, and then Ed will go.
Yeah, there's been some discussion about that by the Uber geeks on Slashdot, and they point out that it's a common technique that firewalls use. Crawford says that, yeah, it's used by the Great Firewall of China, and so it's, you know, some kind of authoritarian technique. But it's actually, that's a common thing to do in any firewall. And the idea is that on the cable modem network is so sensitive to upload traffic congestion that the most efficient way to keep it clear is simply to limit the number of connections that can be made inside the cable modem network. And in traffic engineering, we call that technique admission control. And it's essentially used to not start a new communication session unless you have the communications resources to supply it with the bandwidth that it needs. So there, I think there's really nothing wrong with that.
Professor Felton?
Well, I'll agree that it's a technique that is used in a number of applications, but it also is, if you look at what's happening in the nuts and bolts, it is an impersonation of each party to the other. It's in some circumstances an accepted practice. Apparently, it's not broadly accepted in this instance. So I don't think it's right to say that there's nothing to the argument that it involves impersonation of one party, because it does, after all, involve sending network packets that purport to come from somebody other than the person who really is sending them. And whether you consider that a legal violation, an ethical violation, or not, that's up to you. Hmm. There certainly are situations, and it's also worth noting that attaching falsely attributing the source of network packets is a technique which is widely used by actual bad guys as well.
But that's like saying that, you know, that bad guys use telephones, and so anyone who uses a telephone is suspect. I'd like to know is what the alternative is if they're not going to use TCP resets. You know, unfortunately, the IP protocol doesn't really provide too many tools to the traffic engineer to do things like this in a more explicit way. And a TCP reset is unfortunately just the best tool that it provides to bring about admission control when there's no higher level session protocol like SIP that's being used where you could explicitly, you know, refuse to take the call.
Well, I just think we don't know, given that Comcast is being so closed-mouthed about what specifically they're doing beyond sort of staying vaguely where they're shaping traffic. I think we don't know. We can't tell whether what they're doing is the sort of best, least invasive way for them to accomplish their legitimate network management goal or not.
Adam, can I ask another question?
Sure.
Something else I'm trying to wrap my head around as a non-technical person is why is Comcast choosing to sort of target an entire protocol? If what you're trying to do is target bandwidth hogs, why not do per-user management? And in that sense, you could then publish, well, this is what our cap is, and anybody who goes above this cap, you know, we're going to have to either meter you or kick you off or whatever.
Jerry, let me make that a little more concrete, because this is my favorite hobby horse, as you know, is the question of why in the world are broadband providers in this country not dealing with this problem of excessive bandwidth used for by whatever application or party by essentially better metering the price. That is, instead of engaging in some form of packet discrimination, engage in what would be a more reasonable form of price discrimination. So use price signals and the price mechanism to price users at the margin who are using bandwidth excessively. I'd love to get Richard or Ed to comment on the feasibility of that as a solution to this. Why don't we start with Professor Felton?
Sure. Technically, it's completely feasible. The reason it mostly doesn't happen is that consumers seem to hate it.
Right.
What consumers want to buy, apparently, is a reasonably priced service that says it provides whatever it is they're going to want. And the ISPs are a little bit stuck here between the customer's desire to have a sort of unlimited service at a fixed price and the difficulty in actually providing service to people who use everything that that the network makes available to them. So they're kind of trying to steer an uncomfortable middle course here, where they where they are, where they're promoting the service as nearly unlimited or essentially unlimited, but then trying to actually limit what some of their customers do.
And Richard, do you agree with that?
I think that's sort of true, but kind of orthogonal to the, or sort of beside the point. Comcast does offer different tiers of service, and they don't claim that any of them is unlimited. They have, you know, specific download maximums and specific upload maximums, and they offer commercial accounts to people that want to operate servers. So the tiered service model is essentially already in effect, and of course nobody likes the commercial service because it's a lot more expensive than the residential service. And as far as the question of why target BitTorrent when, you know, what you're actually going after is bandwidth hogs, is that as a practical matter, it's really the same thing. All the bandwidth hogs are running BitTorrent, so that's really all you have to do.
See, the difference there, though, is that when it gets to policy, it's not the same thing. It's much harder for somebody who is talking about net neutrality to make an argument against regulation when you're discriminating against an entire protocol.
Well, and they're not. It's not limited to BitTorrent. They also throttle Nutella, and apparently they accidentally were throttling Lotus Notes as well. And the Lotus Notes, my God, that's used by the CIA. That's very important. We can't have people throttling that.
James Gattuso, you had a question?
Yeah, I was just going to mention there is a Washington Post article today on this that had some pretty good descriptions of the situation. And on the unlimited demand, the way they put it was that the ISP's dilemma is that they want to offer unlimited service and then hope that no one takes them up on it. It's sort of like, you know, another analogy is a bank that all banks have on-demand withdrawals, but you just have to hope that everyone doesn't come to the bank at the same time and ask for their money back.
If I could just say,
this is the real dilemma of internet engineering in general. I mean, it's a really essential point that I think almost never comes up in the network neutrality debates, and that is the internet is completely not designed to allow every person who's using it to offer sustained traffic to it. The entire technology of packet switching, and I'm sure Ed is going to agree with me on this, is based on the assumption that users don't access the network all at the same time. If you want to have a network in which everyone is guaranteed a certain level of traffic throughput whenever they can get on the network, well, we have that. It's called the telephone network, and it's limited bandwidth. The reason that we get high performance out of the internet is because we have these high-speed links that are shared by multiple people who don't use them all at the same time. It's this whole kind of bursty traffic model. That's the secret sauce that makes the internet go. And when you get when you get applications that violate that assumption, well, you know, it's trouble.
Ed Felton, any comment on that?
No, I basically agree. This is the dilemma that because consumers are apparently unwilling to accept pay per bandwidth, you're stuck with this dilemma of just hoping that not too many consumers use all their bandwidth all the time.
So one of the responses that I've heard from a lot of bloggers on this front is the old, well, why don't they just build more capacity argument? And I guess there's something to that after all. I mean, frankly, if we had unlimited capacity in the network, you know, we would solve this problem, right? But is that realistic, or, you know, is it just a case that we could just build a little bit more and it would solve the problem? You know, building a little bit more is not an easy thing to do, of course, but that's obviously one theoretical solution. I'm sure there are others. Why don't we discuss that now, which is, you know, what are the alternatives here, and is just building capacity going to solve the story? Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, they do have to add more capacity to their networks. Essentially, everybody that provides internet access is more or less involved in constantly adding capacity to their networks because user demand for bandwidth is like user demand for memory or CPU speed. It only increases, and the more, you know, you put out there, the more ways people find to use it.
That's my opinion, which is that it's like, you know, it's like the old iron law of expenditures. You know, I mean, expenditures rise with your wages and your income. I mean, and so the more bandwidth you have doesn't mean it's necessarily going to solve the problem. There'll probably be more bandwidth intensive things out there to use that bandwidth that's provided. So network management's going to continue to be an issue, even in a world of more capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I mean, the one thing that Comcast really should do, and they may very well be planning it. I'm not privy to Comcast's corporate strategy. Their network is highly asymmetrical, as we talked about earlier. It's tuned to handle more downloads than uploads. And the thing that the major implication of BitTorrent becoming such a hugely popular protocol is that traffic is now more symmetrical. And so there's a new version of the cable modem network called DOCSIS 3.0 that's intended to provide a more symmetrical network. And I think they need to move in that direction. I think that'll alleviate a lot of these problems long term. But it's an expensive transition, and it obsoletes all the cable modems that people have bought in order to use the Comcast network.
So, Jerry and James, let me ask you a political question, which is that this Comcast controversy comes fresh on the heels of the recent Verizon controversy with the NARAL incident having to do with supposed text blocking activities for messages going over their network. Do you think these incidents are the kind of sort of horror stories that would drive public policy or drive a renewed regulatory effort either at the FCC or in Congress to impose net neutrality? I mean, how would you handicap the odds of anything happening because of these incidents? James, you go ahead first.
I think these incidents are enough to keep net neutrality in the news, and probably is the only way that the supporters of net neutrality regulation have to keep it in the news right now. But by themselves, I don't see this being enough to push forward legislation. Each of these incidents, there were non-regulatory ways of handling them, either through existing mechanisms or through the marketplace. And frankly, none of them meet the classic definition of net neutrality would be prohibited in a lot of the bills that are out there. Again, charging money for tiered pricing. So, to an extent, they're apples to the oranges of the main net neutrality debate.
Hmm. Jerry, any thoughts?
Sure. You have to remember that the FCC is still considering its notice of inquiry. And when the comments were filed in that, I remember that I did a count of how many. The FCC was very clear about what it wanted. It wanted evidence of instances of blocking, et cetera. And when I did a count of how many were presented, there were none. The proponents of net neutrality regulation pointed to Madison River, which happened before the DSL order, et cetera. So there were really no concrete examples of blocking. And since the comment period ended in the FCC proceeding, you've had all these cases that you pointed out. So I wonder, to the extent that the FCC might want to move in this direction, whether this gives them at least some of the evidence that they were looking for.
Hmm. Professor Felter or Richard Bennett, do you have any thoughts on how this plays out politically?
Well, I think it is. I think it does illustrate one of the conundrums in the net neutrality debate, which is this trade-off between, or the difficulty, some perhaps, of distinguishing legitimate network management from interferences with neutrality. It's not always an easy thing to tell the difference, as we can tell by this discussion here and by the discussion in the blogosphere. And unlike, say, the NARAL example, where it was really about a network provider being uncomfortable with specific content, this really does get, I think, to the heart of the regulatory difficulties involved in network neutrality.
Richard?
Yeah, I think the network neutrality advocates really are hoping that this will revive the issue, because network neutrality has really been pretty much on life support for about the last 14 months. The Verizon issue, as interesting as that was, is something that affected the cell phone network. It didn't have anything to do with the internet. I think it's no accident that the people that have been the most vocal and the most prone to demonize Comcast in some very incendiary language are the people who were front and center on network neutrality when it was an actual live issue, 14 to 18 months ago.
Well, that's going to do it for Tech Policy Weekly this week. I want to thank Ed Felton, Richard Bennett, James Gattuso, and Jerry Brito for joining me. And to read more commentary from the entire Technology Liberation Front gang, please visit us at techliberation.com. If you'd like to comment about something we said here on today's show, you can post a comment on the website at techliberation.com/podcast and leave a comment on the very page for this show. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, please write a review of the show on iTunes, and don't forget to dig our podcast. Until next week, I'm Adam Thier. See you then.